Okay, here we go. Thank you so much for coming, and today we'll continue with, since you all did your self-discovery on, you know, deeply connecting with your feelings, and then what those feelings finally, you know, what belief systems we are going into, right? And then when we're able to think like that, then the next time the response is different. I mean, it won't be immediately different, but at least, you know, the consciousness has kicked in, and gradually, after like 5, 6, 10, 20 times, you know, you'll be able to overcome that. Or, you know, if we're simple and we're trying to change, but we don't know these techniques, and we keep feeling frustrated with ourselves, and we lose confidence, and so many things happen. So, I just thought we'll do this short thing with the gifts we gain when we own our feelings. And you know what we are feeling, how we are feeling, why we are feeling, like all of these things. So I just got this table, right? So if you are feeling, finally you connect the list to the middle. You're feeling, like say, lonely and alone. You know, so you're, now we want to think without any judgment. We want to take responsibility for what we are feeling, because that's our response to the situation, right? Usually it's like, oh, that person is making me laugh, or that person is making me angry, or that person is agitating me, or annoying me, or doing this and doing that, right? Then we are not actually, we are helpless. Because even like the easiest person to change is yourself. So changing ourselves itself is so hard. So what to speak of trying to change somebody else? You know, so our happiness will not come by changing someone else, because we may be able to control one person, but we can't control the entire world and change how people respond to us. So, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Narad Muni and Yudhishthira are talking, and Yudhishthira is asking, you know, what is the principle of happiness? So Narad Muni says satisfaction. And he, because that is the principle of happiness. Because if you're satisfied, you're always happy. So instead of teaching children how to be happy by achieving things, we want to teach them happiness or satisfaction, because then they're always happy. Because satisfaction is an internal thing, it doesn't depend on something external. So then he gives an analogy, and he says that suppose you are, Narad Muni explains to Yudhishthira, but suppose you are on a beach, and you're standing on the hot sand, and it's really sunny. So your feet are burning. So then you try to move on to another location, right? You walk towards where there's a sand, is not sand. Then maybe you walk into the water. So when you walk into the water, then the thorns are, like, you know, biting your feet, they're hurting your feet. Then you say, oh, this is not comfortable also, let me go and stand on the gravel. When you stand on the gravel, then the gravel is not very comfortable to stand on. The things are very pointy. So Narad Muni says that the solution is not to keep changing the situation. The solution is to wear shoes. Okay? When you wear shoes, you can stand anywhere. It's internal, you know. So we want to cultivate that strength, you know, those senses, those things inside. So then we can deal with any situation and any difficult situation or any situation, and then we can really be of service to someone else. Because when our emotions are in check, and when we are objective, and we are situated in the mode of goodness, you know, then we can really be of service to someone else. But if we are all over the place, then you can't help someone else. If you are in trouble, who do you want to go to help? You want to go to someone who is hyper-emotional? Or someone who... we needed some help. So my husband went to a family member. And I was like, why are we toxic? Why are we going to this family member? Because I mean, he's a nice person, very genuine and everything. But I know he just keeps going like this and like this. And then what happened is, for a while he was taking us on his roller coaster. And we were like, this is not helping us. And, you know, we appreciate your help, but you don't need to. So you want to be with someone who, you yourself want to be stable. So you can finally be a giving person. See, life is not about taking, life is about giving. Giving we receive. Because, you know, we are servants of Krishna, Dasanudas. We want to live that life. Now, how can we, like, really serve somebody is when you yourself are stable. So when we access these feelings, and we understand the thoughts connected with it. So, for me, there was a discovery that, like, loneliness was a very big thing for me. Like, in spite of coming in from a big family, and, you know, I'm always being surrounded by people, and also over here, you know, I have good social relationships with everyone. But still, somewhere in my heart, that loneliness was like a very deep wound, and, you know, the slightest thing I could, like, do is really badly lonely. And then I would have a lot of expectations from my husband, you know, how much will you do? Right? I mean, he kind of, like, just keep filling up all my time with it. Finally, it's me, and then The more I learned this exercise and the more I learned how to do this thing, and I had help from friends, I learned how to do this, like, you know, oh, I'm feeling lonely again right now. And I really like feeling lonely. This is extremely hard for me. Loneliness is a tough thing, you know. More like giving myself that understanding and compassion. And otherwise, what my response would be, oh, he left me and he wasn't the dude again. Oh, you left me lonely. Why are you not here? You always do this. Blah, 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 blah. You know, so what I've learned is that, no, you know, I'm feeling lonely, so I can only make a request to someone. But then, you know, the gift I gained by going through this exercise was, okay, I learned that I don't like feeling lonely. My need to connect with people, so I'm going to go and reach out to people. Because it's about me, it's not about other people rejecting me or not wanting to spend time with me or any of those things. It's my own need to, you know, reach out to others. Then, you know, some humility also comes in. So you're taking ownership of your own feelings and you're taking responsibility of how you're feeling, and some humility comes in. Or say, like, there is pain, you know, you, like, women, the thing happens, we want to connect with people, but then, you know, the thoughts are still aggressive, and sometimes they don't talk nicely, and sometimes they don't talk nicely, and men don't understand, you know, all those things that we do. But then, you know, the feeling that pain, and then, you know, you can be compassionate. Oh, I really wish to connect with her, but she doesn't want to speak with me, and, like, being rejected like that feels very painful. You know, it's not about them again, it's about what you are feeling. Just keeping the experience closer home, like what's going on inside of me. It's like when you're in an accident. Suppose you are in an accident. What are you going to worry about? Suppose you injured yourself and you're bleeding. What are you going to worry about? How much damage was done to the car and who did it and why they did it and what their intention was and how they badly banged you and that was not right and right and wrong? Or are you going to think about how the hell do I stop this bleeding and how do I call 911 and how do I get myself treated? Are you going to be worrying about the situation and who was right and wrong at that time? Yeah, so what happens in every interaction when there's an accident? We don't realize that we're not healing ourselves. We're just trying to justify and, you know, find the right and wrong and blame and, you know, get clarity that I did not do a mistake or, you know, that person is wrong or not.
You're trying to justify your behavior.
Yeah, justify your own behavior. But what we're not doing is connecting with what we're feeling and how bad that is feeling and how tough it is. And, you know, just remember that analogy. You know, I'm in an accident right now. I need to fix myself.
And what do you do with that feeling, right? You're feeling bad, but how do you fix that feeling, or how do you, like, when
you
internalize that feeling, or?
No, you heal it by being compassionate to yourself and accepting of yourself. See, these feelings will always be there till you have this human body. It's not that you're going to reach that really steady state of the soul where nothing affects me. Yeah, you know, it is love, but after a lot of constant practice and detachment. But finally, when you're able to do these things and connect with your feeling, you will feel some healing. Then your anger towards people and everyone else will reduce, or you being out of control will reduce, because you're going to experience some healing, because you're connecting with them. See, when a child is hurt, right, suppose, you know, children when they're hurt, and if they come to the mother, and the child goes on, you know, like, what would the mother do first? The mother will first, you know, pacify, soothe the child, stop the child from crying, and then, you know, any cleaning of the wound needs to be done, and the child needs to be bandaged, or whatever needs to be done. Right? And then the child is going through some kind of trauma, like, I got hurt, and she's soothing him. So just by that soothing, the crying reduces, and the pain reduces, and the anger reduces also, right? The same way, you know, we understand things, how to deal with our physical wounds, and, you know, stuff that hurts at a physical growth level, because we're gross people. But there are things that happen at the subtle level also, and the more you connect with your feelings, you deeply feel them, then you release them. They automatically get released. You don't feel, how do you heal yourself?
Sometimes you think a little bit too much. And I feel like that, I have to tell myself that you're thinking about it too much. It's not a big deal. You just need to, you know, get out of it and, you know.
I think if you're thinking about other people too much, then it's a problem. But if you're thinking about just healing ourselves in that moment and learning this art, it's okay. It's going to be helpful. And then, of course, you need other coping strategies also, which I'm not discussing here, but you want to know how to get yourself out also, right? You know, you want to be in a comfortable environment. Like for me, if I'm affected, going out for a walk helps me a lot. Or drinking some tea helps me a lot, like every day, you know. Or just taking a shower helps me, it just goes off. Like the steam goes off. You know, you have to find different ways to take care of yourself and cope with these things. Like we covered some of that in the take care of yourself, body, mind and soul. You want to find ways to reduce stress, take care of yourself or not. Because, you know, sometimes the situation can be very toxic and the person is not going to change. But at least you can heal yourself. And you can, you know, still be connected to the person, still be connected to the person, waiting for ready for the relationship. Otherwise what happens is all this toxicity comes in and then both sides don't want to interact and all, but they want to interact because their interactions are always fireworks. But if, you know, if we have done our internal work patiently, then we are at least ready to receive the love whenever the other person is capable of giving or connecting. Otherwise, usually what happens in relationships, you know? One higher is listening, this is listening, like both are, you know, tense in their body. But one person is like, okay, you know, I'm healing myself because I'm healing because of myself and all of that. And then they're ready to receive again when the other person cools off. But you can't force the other person to cool off. And then we have to let go, as you said, thinking too much doesn't help because finally Krishna is in control, so you can't do much. And we can't really fix things. That's another thing I'm trying to, it's another theme I'm trying to tell myself, I can't fix anything. You know, I can only observe it, I can only play my part and you know, do that because I can't fix anything. And then that gives me a big release actually. You know, just like, oh, I can't fix anything. Let's be cool about this.
I actually had the same question yesterday, which you were saying, but to your point, when you said in the beginning of the class that we tend to obviously think when situations happen, but if we think about what happened, why did that person do it, that actually increases our pain. But if we start thinking about, hey, why did I act in that manner, and what is bringing that thing out of me, and how can I fix that, that probably will help.
Yeah, and even, yes, and even before that, just deeply feeling, like, you know, when I was able to, like, really deeply feel how bad my loneliness felt to me, I felt I needed to do something about it. And was not waiting for someone else, and said, I said, I don't want to be in these pits that I feel when I feel lonely, and I want to do something about it. So then I started doing a lot of things about it. And then it didn't become like a them problem, it became my problem. And I could make requests then, and you know, very naturally my husband would say he could do requests. So otherwise when I would be screaming, he would not listen. But when I would say like, oh, you know, I'm really feeling lonely right now, you know, please sit with me for some time. And then he would say, oh, you're feeling lonely? Oh, okay. Because, you know, then we are vulnerable, and we're ready to open up our feelings like that. And then the other person may or may not respond, so you got to be ready for that also. Because sometimes they're like, ah, I'm feeling lonely, and I'm like, oh, really, who cares? Yes, and that has also happened. Yeah. Yeah. But then, you know, that also hurts, and, you know, that hurts. But then I was just thinking that at least I have a 50% chance of, you know, getting somebody to be with me, because I really need the person. But then, you know, when you realize it's your problem, you also start requesting and not demanding. The communication becomes like, you know, I really need to be with someone right now, so can you be with me? Then, you know, I'll really appreciate if you can be with me. And then you're like, ah, why do I need all this formal language at home? And if I start talking like this, my husband's going to think I'm going crazy. No, it works. It works because it really gets their attention. You know, and we learn a proper way of communicating our needs. When we don't have to make, I'm needing this, and I'm requesting you, and like, you know, you're also giving the other person that respect and choice. Or we are like, ah, it's my birthright, just because I'm married to you, you better spend time with me. And then you're like, oh, she's controlling me, let me run away from here. It works, you try it, and then we keep repeating the seminar. Well, you know when there's, say, like, examples, like when there's fear, then we can say that, oh, you know, I feel really scared when I hear people screaming. Or usually what we try to do is we ask people to shut up. Hey, stop screaming. Why are you screaming? You know, this other guy's like, ah, stop screaming. And then we stop screaming. But then you're like, oh, I get really anxious about, you know, what's going to happen next when people start screaming. So when you recognize you have that fear, otherwise usually you will find yourself just telling people to shut up and stop and everything, right? And it doesn't happen. It's still going on inside. But when you learn how to recognize, oh, actually it's my fear, then you're like, okay, you know, I feel scared when things like this happen, so maybe I'm going to take a walk outside, or I'm going to take, you know, do some breathing. Or, you know, some people live in very stressful and very hostile environments also, so they want to find coping strategies for that. Or when you're feeling shame, then you're feeling like you made a mistake again. We will discuss more of that, so we'll do that in the next slide, and in future slides. But when you're feeling worthwhile, right, some positive feelings. Oh, I'm happy that I was able to help them very well, and wow, you know, I can really help people, so let me do more of that, and I want to be of better use to humanity. So then when you connect to your feelings also, there's less of pride and arrogance coming in. Like, ah, I'm the guy. You're not focused on the situation now. You know, you're more focused on like, wow, I'm feeling happy doing this, and you know, it makes me feel satisfied because it's in line with what Krishna wants me to do. And, you know, I want to help, and it helps you grow yourself as someone also like that, in the right way. Or when you're confused, you know, I'm so confused right now, I can't make sense of the situation. Usually when I'm confused, I expect everyone else to sort out my confusion by doing their part properly or finishing their stuff on time and everything. Because I need clarity. But then, again, it's about controlling someone else. But then I realize, oh, I don't like confusion. And when it's confused, you know, I get angry, I get anxious, I start doing these kind of weird things, I start controlling people and the response is not that. And I'm like, oh, I find it so hard to be so confused and I'm not knowing what step to take. You know, this makes me anxious. And then next time you're confused, you're able to say that to the other people. You know, like, I get very anxious when things are confusing, like from my husband, because things are so random sometimes, and then I'm able to say, I'm like, why are you doing this? Stop being so random. You know, but actually it's a cry out for, I don't like confusion, so stop creating confusion. You know, that's what I'm meaning. But I say, stop being so random. You know, it's not helping the situation. But then, when I'm learning how to communicate like this, like, you know, I'm not able to deal with it when things are random and things are, you know, not predictable at all. It's really hard for me. I'm trying to work on this thing, but I still find this really hard for me. I would like you to give me some advance notice before we do something. I'm not able to. That's not a skill I have. And it's not like, that's not a skill I have. Don't even, no. It's not from a place of arrogance. It's more from like a humble place. I'm going to request. Anyway, we can't control the person, so let's try in a positive way to do that. Then you get a gift. Also, that you understand, okay, when I'm confused, I'm anxious. So when somebody else is confused, they can be anxious too. So when you understand your own feelings, you're able to be more compassionate to other people also. You know, empathy, we understand other people's feelings and emotions more. Like, someone told me that nobody can tell you what it is to get married until they themselves are married. Right? Because they've gone through their entire experience. So, emotions work in the same way. When you are deeply connected to your emotions and feelings, you're able to have that empathy for other people also. And it really changes how you deal with other people. So when I learn about myself, I don't like it. I guess I'm really scared when people are screaming. Then I can sense it in another person also. Right? Anyway, I just wanted to show you. Now, also, there is this next thing about self-acceptance. Now, a lot of times while we do these exercises, we will discover some, you know, a lot of thoughts and belief systems which we never knew we had. Or we never thought, and they will not be positive all the time. We want to learn how to accept ourselves, right? So I learned this really harsh reality about myself that I am not controlling people, and then I've been hearing for 9 years that Krishna is a supreme controller and, you know, human beings want to control people. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not like that, you know. Krishna is a controller. Yeah, I'm surrendered to Krishna. But then more I do this exercise, I'm like, I really like controlling people. And it's hard to accept that because it doesn't fit with the nice image I have about myself. That I'm so giving and loving. It gets hard, you know, it takes humility to accept them, right? So how do you feel about yourself or others in that situation? You know, now you may have such discoveries about yourself and you want to deal with them also properly. So, you know, sorry, this animation was not done right, but, you know, you have two choices. Like, you can say, oh, you know, I do this thing because that person triggered me, it's not my fault, you know, that's not taking any responsibility. Or the other thing is, how could I be so stupid, you know? These are like two separate ends of the spectrum. One thing is like, not like accepting any error on our part, and the other thing is like, oh man, I was so stupid. And getting so, and you know, both of them are totally not self-accepting. Because in this case, this person doesn't want to accept the fact that they can make a mistake. So they just blame it on another person. But in that case, that person is having such a hard time accepting the fact that I could also make a mistake, you know. So the self-acceptance in these both cases is there only if I'm perfect, right? This one also has a need for perfection, and that one also has a great need for perfection. And can you and I be perfect? No. Even if entire India tells you that you gotta be perfect. Maryada Purushottam. It's hard, right? So in both these cases, the acceptance this person has about herself is only when she's perfect. And we're never going to be perfect. Because we have four defects. Did they do the four defects with you?
Yes.
Those are the four the problems of life. You know, they'll do that with you. So we have imperfect senses. Okay? We can't see stuff. Sometimes you see stuff like, you know, especially when it's so sunny and you're driving, you really feel like you're driving on water sometimes on the road. Because of how you're seeing things, you know, our senses are not perfect, or you know, you can't hear everything that dogs can hear. Right? In school we learned about frequencies and audible range, and dogs have a bigger audible range, or whales have a bigger audible range. So they're imperfect senses. Now, because senses are through which we get all the data, right? Through our eyes, ears, nose, and everything. And so basically the data you're getting is not perfect, right? Then you fall into illusion, right? Seeing is not believing, hearing is not believing. You know, like, is there water on the road? No. There's no water on the road. But because it's so sunny and it's reflecting that my eyes think it won't. So you tend to fall into illusion. And then when you fall into illusion, you can make mistakes. And then when you make mistakes, and then you want to cover up for yourself, then you cheat. Right? No, it's not the same. So you have this, you know, there are these things. So we're not going to be perfect. So we want to lovingly accept ourselves with our imperfect parts. You know, you have to have this kind of very loving and accepting relationship with yourself. Then you will have that loving and accepting relationship with other people also. And my fear used to be that if I think like this, I'm going to get really composed. I'm not going to fix myself. Because I need that whip all the time. Hey, come on, how can you make a mistake? Hey, what are you doing? No, what I realized is that when we can accept ourselves like that, then we really transform. In both of these ways, we don't really transform, and that itself is another seminar altogether, so we will not go too much into detail. But you know, like, I don't have to convince myself or others that I was perfect in responding in the wrong way. You know, I was not perfect, and I'm really sorry I made a mistake. And one thing to know is, Krishna really loves me. In spite of my imperfection. The love we got in this world is conditional. Right? If you do well, I love you. If you don't do well, I show upset. If you make a mistake, I'm upset with you. If you please me completely, I love you and I do everything right. So we thought love is at a premium. And we thought only we could be perfect and we could get love from people. But that's not how it is. Because Krishna loves us completely. However we are. You know, so love himself. Self-accepting way would be, oh, that was not very nice of me to respond like that. I really hurt her and she must have felt terrible, so it doesn't take a big deal to apologize. It's accepting, okay, I made a mistake. Now, people may say, okay, so I made a mistake. No, that's not self-accepting. They were again being defensive. Let me say those responses, even we've
done. What about if others have made mistakes? Like, you know that they're a person who made mistakes, then you can do anything about it.
No, and then when you have yourself gone through what you felt when they made a mistake and everything, and then you can communicate to them, you know, I was really hurt. And you again just speak about your experience. No, when you do something like this,
and I felt this way.
Yeah. Yeah, and I felt this way, and I felt that you were very indifferent to my request. You know, that really hurt me. And again, it's a very sober and very respectful and humble, you know, thing. It's not like, it's not like that. So, you know, it's about being neutral and compassionate. You know, I am tiny and imperfect, and yet lovable. Krishna loves me unconditionally. So I will make a change because I wish to reciprocate with his love. So your impetus to change is not to please, not to become perfect. Your impetus to change is because he loves me, so out of gratitude for him, you know, I can do this for myself and the others. Right? So again, some more things on self-acceptance. Don't beat yourself up. Don't suffer for yourself. Be neutral and compassionate. You know, and again, Krishna. The other example of self-acceptance is that when somebody hurts us, or if we hurt someone, but they still continue loving us, and they still continue having a deep relationship with us, then are you inspired to change? Yes? Is it clear? Like, I can give my personal example. Like, Bhaji Govind Prabhu is our pujari here, he's like the head pujari, and we all learn how to address the deities and serve the deities. So, my service and my husband's service, we all have services on different days. We all come and serve the deities, cooking, or, you know, setting their jewelry, or putting the jewelry, arranging the jewelry back, or, you know, coming and dressing them up. Deities are bathing them, doing aarti, but we're all being trained in them. Sometimes on Wednesday, like this Wednesday, what happened is that because somebody in our family is not well, so then we had to apply for a visa, and we were sitting until 3 a.m. doing the visa application process in the night because we just got done with Anandmail and we didn't get time during that time, so we said, okay, we have to finish this thing. So while we were doing that, then of course I can't make it to the temple at 5 in the morning or 6 in the morning. It was very hard for me. So we did inform him earlier, we were trying to call him earlier, like, because we knew we would not be able to do it, and we were thinking if we could come on another day to compensate. We're not able to reach him, so we sent him a text. But when he woke up in the morning, he did not, he had not known that he's got, you know, we won't be able to come. So he was not prepared. Imagine what a surprise it can be for him. I think just address some of the DPs. So then he's depending on the people, right? All the people. Now, what was his response was, he calls me the next day. He's not telling me, what is this? You didn't tell me on time. What do you mean you can call an email? You need to let me know 2 days in advance. Why did you do this? What is this? No. He's like, Mata, is everything okay, both of you? You know, I was just concerned you were not able to make it for the deity worship. And then I saw your text, you all slept at 3 a.m. in the night. Is everything okay with you? And I was like, yes, everything is okay. And you know, this happened, and we're really sorry that, you know, we're using your niceness and, you know, we weren't able to come. Now, on Friday, he told me, Mata, can you call for service on Sunday morning? Because I didn't have time. Without thinking, I'm saying yes to him, whether it fits in my schedule or not. Because I was so lovingly treated and I was accepted in spite of, you know, not being the best communicator and not, you know, being responsible enough, you know, for serving the deity. He still lovingly accepted both of us, and he was just concerned about was everything okay with us. And then when he said that, now, because he, you know, I want to change, no, I want to be better in, you know, my thing, because I don't want this devotee to, you know, go through that experience again, because he has been so loving and merciful and so nice. So when we become accepting of ourselves and we are loving and, you know, forgiving of ourselves, then actually there is change. And now, because this is a new concept, it's hard to understand it, but when you do it, you will experience it. Anyway, and then there is this line that you must remember always is, from acceptance comes transformation. So when you accept, then you can transform. But in both two cases, that person did not accept that they were not perfect and, you know, okay, like, I need to fix this thing. So then the transformation is harder. So when we can accept, so then there is some humility and some impetus to change our belief system and all of those things. Now, we may try all of these things. And you may try all these, you know, deep feeling exercise, self-compassion, self-acceptance, and all. But we still find that change is very hard. It is extremely hard.
Yeah.
Right? We keep making our efforts, but it's very hard. And I'm just, you know, we had this video. This is the whole cycle. This is our emotional cycle that Krishna describes. And you know, we saw that video that ladies wanting a house and then they think about the house and all. So I've just put the verse here. When you're thinking about something, you develop attachment for them and then you deeply want it, that is lust. And then from when that desire is not satisfied, you get angry. So like my desire of companionship is not satisfied, so I get angry. Right? And then when I'm angry, then complete delusion arises, right? You're bewildered. And deluded, because all the good things that you know, all the good values that you have instilled in yourself or you have learned from the environment around you, you forget everything. And you just act like a gross animal response. And then you lose your intelligence, you lose the sense of right and wrong, and then you lose, and then you lose it, and then you fall into the material pool. So now Krishna is explaining this thing. Right? So here, like imagine you're one of these frogs in this deep dark world. You're trying very hard, like, you know, with all these different techniques that we have been discussing since yesterday. Right? You are trying very hard and you're making some progress, right? You see some frogs moving up and down, and this frog is making some progress. But then sometimes you fall further deep down. And then you're moving around, but then you're still in the same zone, the same dark zone, and sometimes it gets, like, you really need someone to pull you out, right? So would it be easier if, like, all of us just went and pulled these frogs out of this world? Right? It would be so much easier for them. So we need that. On our own, this is going to be very difficult. It's not easy. It is impossible, let me say. But we still need to do our part. Right? We do our part and we make some progress. But to really, you know, facilitate our progress and go further in this thing, we need some help. So we surrender, you know, we realize that, you know, I am not, like, fully capable of sustaining myself. It's impossible. Because I'm so covered by this material energy and, you know, so much of illusion, and as you do DYS, those things will be clear to you. It's going to be very hard. Then I'm so humbled by my own failures and by my own lack of success in this thing that I really need help. So, you know, it's important to do all this internal work, then we can really chant Hare Krishna with, you know, with the desire, you know, that Krishna, please help me. Otherwise, when you're not doing this internal work, you think everything is okay, and Hare Krishna, you know, like, oh, you're like, Hare Krishna, Krishna, help me, you know, you're more deeply focused in your prayers and everything else. Because there is humility, you really want to cross over this, you know, ocean of birth and death, you really want to cross over this, all these emotions and everything, and come to that steady state where you can fully worship and serve Krishna. So, we need to do this introspection and internal work to realize how deeply we are in this world, and make that effort, because Krishna will reciprocate to the extent to which you make that effort also, you know, as much as you want to make. So then we really cry out to Krishna for help, and then Krishna comes, you know, to take us out of this deep dark world, this ocean. So we just read that cycle of how a person, you know, loses memory, intelligence, falls down in the material world. But then Krishna says further, so we read the 263, but Krishna says further that one who is not connected with the Supreme can have neither intelligence, transcendental intelligence, nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. How can there be any happiness without peace? Right? So now we are trying to have a steady mind, we're trying to take charge of our emotions and everything, but on our own it's not going to be possible, because he's telling that you've got to be connected with me. And when you're connected with that higher, you know, you're in the higher realm, and you're connected with me, and through my help you'll be able to overcome this thing. Right? So then you have the ropes of prayer coming. You are still jumping and making your effort, but then you also have, you know, some rope to climb up on. Then you're able to come out of.
Very nice.
And like this dog was just watching all his sons, and then he's like, oh, okay, prayer works, let me do it also. So we will be able to surrender. It's very easy with Microsoft animation. I'll show it to you today. This is my favorite slide.
I was thinking, why the ropes are not coming?
Right? So, you know, when we get that help, then we are able to cross over. So now, right now, don't read all of that. It's going to confuse you. Now, the different levels of consciousness we are at. You know, when there is the first level of consciousness, or the koshas that the Vedas describe is, you know, first level is where we're just trying to get our basic method. When a child is born, what is the child most concerned about? Right? That's the anamaya, anna, right? Food, anamaya consciousness. And why is the child so attached to the mother? Because the anamaya kosha satisfies to the mother. And that's why you can get so tense when the mother is not there. You can go through that anxiety. So then, and then a lot of us can also be at that, we are at different times of the day, we are in different levels of consciousness. Right? So, you know, like, or anamaya. Right? Pranamaya is, apart from food, you're thinking about your life, you're thinking about protection, you're thinking about comfort, you're thinking about family, you're thinking about caring for family, you're thinking about relationships and all of those things, right? Manamaya, Jnanamaya is where you're thinking about what is the purpose of my life, you know? Why does that thing happen to these people? Who am I? Who's gone? You're just thinking. You're contemplating that. Part of all your food and basic needs and all your social obligations and everything at the second level, you're also thinking about this. Now what happens is, all our thinking and feeling and willing is limited in only in this realm. And mostly the red part. You're constantly thinking about these things. And you're constantly feeling in that realm. And you're constantly doing activities in that realm. Right? Running your family, running your house, running, you know, getting your needs met, self-actualization, this, that, you know, all of those things. Right? So all our thinking and feeling keeps going on in that realm. And then, but in a higher realm, the thinking and feeling, when you're spiritually inclined, is more about thinking about Krishna, pleasing Krishna, trying to follow his instructions, please the devotees, do service to the devotees. So once someone is at this level, Manamaya, you know, when you're thinking about the problems of life and, you know, why do bad things happen to good people or not, then because they're so eager, you know, Krishna sends them, you know, or puts them in a situation in which where they're able to access answers for that thing, or send the spiritual master. So then we are learning some transcendental knowledge. We understand I'm not this body, you know. I'm spirit soul. So all this thinking and feeling and willing that I'm doing here is actually only for this lifetime. And then next lifetime I get another body, then I start thinking, feeling and willing about other people. And then you start, you know, because you get transcendental knowledge, you realize that you're eternal, and you're just taking birth and bodies and everything again and again. And, you know, all the eternality, suppose it's a line drawn by a pencil, then this particular life is just one of the dots in that line. But in that particular dot in that line, you're going up and down in so many things, right? So when you start understanding, okay, you know, I need to, like, you know, do my duties properly, because duties are purifying and giving to Krishna, that I can be like so entangled in all of these things. So it naturally brings the transcendental knowledge helps you calm down your emotions, because you realize you've lost something. Like the joke I have with my husband is, yeah, you're not my eternal husband, it's okay, I'm yeah, I'll do what I have to do, and he said that, so, and he was angry with me. Yeah, you don't do my wife all the time. Okay, I'll just do what you want. No, that's not the right way to think about it, but just, you know, making the point that, you know, we're all meeting each other just like, you know, in the ocean sometimes straw pieces come together and then they go off. That's how all our entire life is. When you get that transcendental knowledge, it helps you calm yourself down. Other emotions in charge, because then you're like, okay, this is not real. Why am I investing my time in this? It's sensitive. You know, yeah, it's painful because I'm still, you know, in this body and, you know, things affecting my body and my mind in this body. So when you reach that Vijnanamaya, you understand that the spirit soul is separate from the thinking and feeling and willing that takes place of the body belonging. Right? So yeah, we'll go deeper into this. And then at that higher level, we're constantly thinking about Krishna. So then there are nine processes of devotional service, chanting Hare Krishna, using your body in service, mind, words, intelligence, and thinking about Krishna, reading scriptures, chanting his holy name, talking about, like, you know, all those, surrendering to him. So then you kind of change your thinking and feeling and willing from your this realm to this realm. So then you do your this realm as a duty to Krishna, but you're not constantly thinking about that. You're not engrossed in that. You're more engrossed in that. Okay, I need to come out of this line. I need to go up. Right? I don't want to remain in this cycle all the time. Right? So, now what I'm trying to say here is that right now our belief system and everything is not so, the belief system or the thoughts, you know, the thoughts and the values and everything that we have. It's something we've accumulated by traveling that line, you know, over many lifetimes. Right? And the more we do this exercise, the more self-discovery is going to come about, you know, kind of conditioning, you know, as we mentioned in the first day, the conditioning that we have, right? And this conditioning is, you know, all these things that we have gathered, observations, you know, in Hindi we say sanskar, or impressions, and, you know, indelible impressions and marks that have been there in our good mind as we've been traveling through this life. And that's why we react to situations the way we do. You just can't trace everything back to your childhood as psychotherapists do here. Is that you just trace everything back to this particular lifetime and this particular, you know, childhood that you have. But, you know, two siblings in the same family will have a different responsibility to that because of their, you know, past and, you know, many, many impressions. And, you know, to understand each one of those and to clear each one of out within one lifetime is impossible, because we've gone through many different lifetimes. What we realize when we're doing all of this and we get transcendental knowledge, we realize we're struggling too much. And it's impossible to do it yourself, so you need that rope so you can climb up. So chanting Hare Krishna is helps us in that, to clean all those impressions that we have carried. So this is one shloka that I haven't chanted in a while, but we're encouraged to chant this every morning before we chant our Hare Krishna Mahamantra. It says that the glory to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years and extinguishes the fire of conditional life of repeated birth and death. So, this is Keto Darpana Marjanam, this cleansing the dust. So the heart, or this buddhi, or this, you know, this whole, this chain of these thoughts and these beliefs and values and everything, is considered like the dust, all these samskaras. It's considered like, you know, it's as a mirror. And, you know, the house has been closed for many, many years. You know, there will be a lot of dust on the mirror. So when you stand in front of the mirror, you can't see yourself. Well, how do you see yourself? By cleaning that mirror. Now, we are not able to see our real nature, our spirit, soul, you know, with having all the different qualities that Krishna has, of, you know, intense, innate capacity, you know, to love people, and to be loving, and to be sharing, and to be giving. We all have that in us. Because of the dust, these mechanisms that we develop to protect ourselves. And see, these belief systems came to protect ourselves. Right? We discussed that yesterday. So all this dust needs to go away. So we do this introspection, but we also need some higher power to help us. And the way we access the higher power is like chanting Hare Krishna. And when you chant Hare Krishna, Krishna personally cleanses all of these things. And people have experience just by chanting Hare Krishna. See, the reason we're sharing all of these psychological tips here is because sometimes people are so disturbed, it's even hard for them to chant Hare Krishna. So sometimes, you know, all of these different tips and techniques help, but actually you don't need these tips and techniques. You know, just chanting Hare Krishna is going to help you take charge of your emotions. But sometimes you can do both, because a devotee is also humble, so then they want to do this introspection and everything. So you do this introspection exercise, but you also chant Hare Krishna, because there is no higher power than Krishna in this world. And if you are constantly calling out to Krishna, it's not different from Krishna himself dancing in your tongue. And you will cleanse all of these different things that are not useful to you in your thing. And you will see, haven't you, like, you know, so many times when we used to take a bus, 69 goes directly to Microsoft, right after the temple. And many devotees would be on that bus at different times. I don't know whether many people use the bus right now. There was a time when a lot of us used to be around the bus. And then we would all be chanting our rounds in the bus because, you know, we've not been able to complete 16 rounds before getting on the bus. Then you're chanting your rounds, or you're reading the Bhagavad Gita, or you're hearing a lecture because, you know, you want to use all the time. And then there would be like so many people on the bus would tell me that, you know, all you guys from the temple, you all look very peaceful, blissful and happy. I want to know what is the secret, you know, and it's not just like, you know, they observe about everyone else and tell the other person, but then, you know, and then so many of us had that experience, and then we were like, we can be peaceful on our own, we really know, you know. And we don't feel so peaceful also, but if so many people are telling this to us, that I saw that too. Well, I wasn't involved with Krishna consciousness, but when I got engaged and my husband was already involved in Krishna consciousness, so then I used to travel in the trains in Bombay, and then I would notice people in the ladies' compartment with tilak, and they would be chanting Hare Krishna. And so there's something is different in their face. I don't know what it is. There's something totally different in their face. And you can see, because there is some peace that has come. And when there is peace, then there can be happiness, as Krishna just explained. Right? There can be no happiness without any peace. So Krishna personally cleanses your belief systems and all. You become less rigid and less, you know, let's attach to all of those belief systems and thought processes and expectations. Because gradually by chanting Hare Krishna, you realize, you know, you start being humble, you start taking responsibility of yourself, and Krishna's magic acts on you. So if you haven't yet started, please do chant Hare Krishna. And then by chanting Hare Krishna, it helps you develop this internal pause button. Right? As we discussed, everything is happening so fast. Right? Because we're in this mode of passion, and you will learn that the three gunas, Rajagun, Tamagun, and Satagun, the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And we all want to be in Satagun. So Satagun is when you can think about things intelligently. Rajagun is when you are the passion, not thinking, it is doing things. You know? So right now, we find ourselves out of control because we are in passion. We want to come to this mode of Satagun. And finally, we want to be in Shuddha Satagun, where you will learn that and develop the transcendental mode of goodness. So how do we develop this internal pause button? Is by doing this introspection, we will see that in the video, you are going to gradually get that pause button. But chanting Hare Krishna also, it puts you in Satgun. And when you are in Satgun, all your senses and everything is illuminated by knowledge. You don't react to situations, you think and do things. But we just see this video. Very quickly. When you're in Satgun, you're situated in wisdom. And you're able to use your wisdom to react, to act in situations, not react to situations. Passion is like, I want to do something. Satgun is like, to pause, observe, do that. You know, so then you're not lost your intelligence and your value system at that time, because then you're like able to connect everything to your value system, which you would have forgotten if you just reacted. Yeah? You just got that. Chanting Hare Krishna makes you peaceful and helps you do this internal work that we've been discussing. So just a little bit of that again. By constantly doing this exercise, when you finally get to this thing, oh, I'm about to do something stupid, let me stop. Yeah, and this should have been bhaktiwoman.org. We first bought this domain and then we thought it doesn't make that much sense, so then now we have the right domain, so I have to change all of this in the video.
Is it on the side?
Huh?
Do you use it on the side?
On the Bhakti Woman side. That's why we have a website now where we're trying to have resources for women in different stages of their life and different aspects of their life.
Bhakti Woman.org.
It's not at the best level right now because we just started it, but we will get there. So what I plan to do is as we do these sessions and then we want to upload that, and then we're also trying to have a team which is looking into Srimad Bhagavatam and getting these different women personalities, characters, and how they dealt with a difficult husband or a difficult child in a spiritual Krishna conscious way. It wasn't easy for Kunti and Draupadi.
Sure.
But it looks like, you know, that time everything was okay, and now, you know what, Kunti was a single mom. You know, let's talk about single moms. Kunti was the best example for that. Or you want to talk about a woman, you know, so many different examples. So we're trying to get those resources and, because everyone wants to be sincere, and everyone wants to give it their best shot, but then we don't know how to. So if we are able to have examples and see how their situation was not different from mine and how they dealt with it in a very you know, nice way and positive way, then you know, we get some hope. So we're trying to do that also. It's a lifetime project. Anyway. So this internal pause button is something that we develop like this by chanting Hare Krishna and also this. Now a little bit of detail on why chanting helps you. Is because the shastras say, what is your size? What is your size? What is your size?
Oh,
full
100,000
people. Yes. Someone asked me my size, I'll say size 6. But actually, because that's the size of my body. So the size of the soul is, suppose I take a strip of your hair from here and I cut it into 100 pieces. And then I take one of those pieces, one of those 100 pieces, and I cut that into 100 pieces. That is your size, and that is my size, and her size, and her size. Right? But it's hard for me to imagine myself as something so insignificant, but with so much potential, right? Given to me by Krishna. But you know, there's so much, so many layers on top of that soul. And it's so hard to imagine that I am a soul, but you know, because of these layers, I start identifying myself with those layers.
And you think the physical
body? And the subtle body. So the subtle body is mind, intelligence, and false ego. So the soul, and then it's covered with the mind, intelligence, and false ego. So the mind is not something physical that you can touch, it's a subtle element. Still an element, it's still matter, but it's subtle. Like air is subtle, it's there, but it's, you can't, you know, like that. So the mind, intelligence, and the false ego, like the coverings of the soul. Now, based on the type of mind you have and the false ego you have, you get a particular type of body, right? And then you're covered with that type of body, right? Now, when somebody is born, right, as soon as the baby is born, hey, you belong to the Shah family, and you know, people in the Shah family are like that, and you know, we're all very happy, and this and this. Or like, oh, you're Sylvia, and Sylvia means, you know, there was this girl Sylvia who was very, you know, intelligent, and we want you to be intelligent, and you know, like this. You know, something being imposed on you, some false identity. Or, oh, you're a girl, and girl means burden, and you know, you know, none of us were treated like that, but it happens in some families. Or, girl means Lakshmi Devi, and you know, I make sure, you know, I'm so happy you've come, now I'll be very wealthy, and you know what I mean? There are so many different impositions that come just with the body, or, oh, you're so-and-so's daughter, and so-and-so's daughter means so-and-so is expected out of you. We develop so many false identities, right? Now we're all in a woman's body, so like, oh, I'm a mother, daughter, wife, sister, aunt, you know, like so many relationships come in that identity.
Isn't it that you're born with those circumstances, you're born in those conditions because we have some karma and we have to actually
live? Yes, yes, yes. We have to fulfill that, but what we are trying to talk here about is not challenge that premise. We're trying to talk about how the real identity of the soul and the size of the soul is so much, but when we're born, you know, so many coverings come on top.
No.
And we identify with those things.
Yeah, so I'm not trying to challenge that. I'm trying to think that essentially that is becoming probably the identity of the person, the external factor,
yes,
the external condition, right?
Yes.
And what we're trying to say is that that does not matter. Those external factors does not matter. What matters is the soul.
Yes, they don't matter, but then there are duties that come with having taken birth that we must fulfill, because those duties have been prescribed by Krishna. And those are some karmic obligations that we have, and you know, so we have these duties as mother, daughter, wife, sister, aunt, or we have these duties and things like that that we must fulfill because Krishna has created those duties for us. Right? Those duties as a woman are coming from Shastra. They have been designed by Krishna. They are perfect actually based on the bodily constitution and everything that we get in the woman's body. It's perfect actually to help us. So we do those duties, but we don't get too engrossed in everything. Like we don't. Like you will see a lot of that in the discovery yourself.
Entangled.
Yeah, you don't get entangled and you don't think that that is all in all. Like you do it because it's your responsibility. A spiritual person will execute their social responsibilities most perfectly. In fact, better than a person who is not in the spiritual. Because you see that this has been given to me by Krishna. And I have to do it as Krishna's service. You become more duty oriented and you do it better.
It's the element of detachment.
Yes.
The expectation that you do.
Yes.
And then all, you know, that's how we can take charge of the
relationship.
So you can relate to it.
Yes. But what happens is, we forget who we really are. Not everyone thinks these are my duties to Krishna. That's why nowadays tolerance is going down. Because people think they're getting a...
One more question. So if you remove all the external factors, all the impositions that have been put on us, or all the causes to relate to, are you saying that every soul is different?
No, every soul's nature is different. And every soul's service to Krishna and what they desire to do for Krishna is different. They are all in different types of mellows of relationships. You will learn that in the 7th or 8th session of the discovery of health course. That every soul relates to Krishna in a different way. But the nature will be different, but the impurities will not be different. The contamination will not be different. Where they're doing things for themselves, where they're doing things to satisfy their desires and all this. So it's going to be more like having a self Krishna and giving joy and Krishna. So the nature, like I'm wired differently from you and you and you. You know? But when we get purified, then our wiring is still be the same. Like I may still like to organize and coordinate and all, and like, you know, someone else would like to be creative and you know, all those things. But then we will use that nature in serving Krishna in our own unique and creative way. Like that. So I'm not telling that these things need to go away. We're not saying that because they can't go away. So just that you have to understand, you know, like, okay, these are my duties, I do them in a detached way. And when you're truly detached, then you can truly love. Because then you're not thinking about what I'm getting from the other person. You can truly give. Now, what we're trying to do is that we get affected by so many things, by this false identity, and our emotions go run havoc. Right? Like, if someone identifies too much with their child's success, then their emotions can go up and down based on whether the child is successful or not. Or if someone identifies too much with their job and that, you know, how beautiful their house looks like, then their emotions will go up and down. You know, if I, like, someone who they go to a party and some children come and like stick to all around the world, then their emotions are going to go up and down. That doesn't mean that, oh, I'm going to be the state of the steady mind and let people come and do jumping, but you will have a different response. You know, you will be doing it as a matter of like, okay, you know, I don't want to mess in my house. You can make a request, but you won't be like, oh, my house! Yeah, some people have to, like, you know, the car.
Yeah.
Somebody bangs your car. Like, if someone is too attached to the car on Facebook and WhatsApp and all, nowadays, like, people like send so many pictures with their car as if they, like, the car is an extension of, you know, their soul, and you know, that's another identity mm-hmm. you have. And there's a joke in Iskan on that. You say, I am the car, aham car, aham car. Aham car is false ego. Right? That is false ego. False ego identifying with something. So I am the car, aham car, aham car. Right? So then your emotions go up and down. But when you, by chanting, what happens is you realize that these things are my duties and, you know, that's on me and I'm different and my duties. So it kind of helps to cleanse them. So then, otherwise your sense of self keeps going up and down, right? So today I'm successful, I'm happy. Tomorrow I'm not successful, I'm not happy. But when you're like, I'm the soul, I'm partial to Krishna. Success and failure in Krishna. My job is to do my duty. Then you're more calm and peaceful. So what is real pride? Real pride is to know I am servant of Krishna. Right? And to get there, we chant Hare Krishna. And when you chant Hare Krishna, you see Harivilas Prabhu, he has, you know, he's a temple person and you should meet him sometime. And I'm the biggest, we all are his biggest fans. And he had a lot of times. The reason a lot of people come on Sunday is just to hear him sing. Kirtan. I was so many people, just by hearing his Kirtan, I feel so happy and ecstatic about my life, you know. So, I've never seen him getting upset if someone is personally, you know, hurting him or doing some harm to him. He doesn't take any offense whatsoever. He's still extremely loving, he'll never have a grudge against anyone. He's extremely loving. If you do something messed up in the temple, he's going to tell you everything. Otherwise, he's just so loving because he knows, you know, who he is and he's helping us all over there. And the next step is, after you know all of these things, so you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're doing all this internal work, you also need some patience. Because things take time, you know, it's millions and billions of lifetime we've accumulated these responses and everything. So, it's not that you learn this class and, oh, I went to this class and nothing is being fixed. No, things are getting fixed. You know, you will see the impact of practicing all of these things over a few years. What Rupa Goswami says, and this is one of the books we study, as I was telling you, in the four books that we do with the degree of Bhakti Shastri, is Nectar of Instruction. And there are only 11 verses in that book, but it's very potent. And he says that there are six principles favorable, and one thing is to be enthusiastic. So even if you become a failure and you've not been able to take charge of your devotion, you still be enthusiastic about, you know, chanting Hare Krishna and following his internal work process. And you go with confidence that, yes, Krishna will help me if I do my endeavor. And you be patient because things take time. Actually, the process is very fast. Because it's what it is in billions of lifetimes, you can overcome in just one lifetime. But because we are the remote control and the touch screen generation, we think like, and that, you know, like, I just hit join in charge of your emotions and my emotions should be in control. Doesn't happen. It takes time. So, patience with yourself and with the process is very, very important. And then there are many other things which you also need at leisure. And we already discussed this. And Krishna is pleased by your endeavor. Like, there was a man whom God asked him that there is this rock, this huge rock, like 20 times his size, and God asked him to push it. So the man kept pushing it, and the rock would not move. So a year later, God came and talked to him. How's it going? He's like, oh, I'm so distressed, and this rock is not moving, and it's not going anywhere. And he's like, I didn't tell you that the rock has to move. I just told you to push the rock. I'm happy as long as you're trying. And you know, who can be more merciful than Krishna? He can even give the position of a mother to Putana, right? So, Putana is coming to kill him by giving him the, you know, poison note. But Krishna, she tried to serve me as a mother, so now she's going to be my eternal mother in the spiritual world. So she gets the position of a mother. So who can be more merciful than Krishna, right? So Krishna is seeing, you know, people are trying, and I know this is very difficult. Right? I'm just looking for some. Maybe I didn't save my slides properly. Okay. So Krishna says in this Bhagavad Gita that this material ocean is very, very difficult to overcome. It's extremely difficult. But for one who surrenders unto me, what is it? Padam padam yat padam. Vatsa padam. Okay. There is this, you know, there is this material ocean. Right, so this ocean of problems that we have, and emotions, and so out of control, and you know, troubles and miseries of life, and it's like an ocean, and how vast is an ocean? Try swimming in an ocean, right? You go to Hawaii, like I went one time, and like I'm very happy to swim in like maybe 10-20 feet. I can't swim here. This is crazy, and I need to be able to put my feet.
You will forget even just by the, you know, yeah, by the depth and visibility.
I need to be able to swim there. If at will, I should be immediately able to touch the floor, like the bottom, you know. So now just imagine, you know, this your own mind that you're dealing with is like this huge ocean, and you're swimming alone. It's going to be tough. If you're swimming with more people, you know, with association of devotees, you're holding people, you're like eating steak, even if you're going in uncharted territory, right? And it's extremely tough, but what Krishna is telling is that this material ocean of mine, Devi Gesha Guna Mai, Mama Maya Duratriya, very difficult to overcome. Mama Maya, my material energy, very difficult, Duratriya, very difficult to overcome. But Mame Vaye Prapadyante, one who surrenders unto me, Prapadyante, Maya Medan Karantiti. I make it very easy to cross this ocean. Because he's going to lift you like the frog and like, okay, come on. Right? So what is another, in Bhagavatam also, there's a shloka that says that this entire material ocean, for a person who is surrendered to Krishna and doing this internal work and chanting Hare Krishna, is reduced to the amount of water that is collected into the cow's hoofprint. So when the cows walk, right, they're going to create impressions by their, with their hoofs. And how much water can go in that? Very well. This entire material ocean that is so difficult to cross, you know, all these emotions and relationships and miseries and, you know, birth, disease, old age and death and adhyatme, kari devi, kari bhautik, all these, you know, miseries caused by other people, miseries caused by my own mind and miseries caused by natural calamities. All these things, you know, that's what our life is all about. And all these problems become like so small, so easy to cross over, okay? So have that faith. You need to do both. Do your own part and then do this thing. So the holy name and the processes of devotional service, they bring us to the lotus feet of Krishna. And as a byproduct, they remove all the causes of suffering and distress. So initially we try all of these things to get over all of, you know, our distress and suffering. But then later we just don't care about the distress and suffering. We're just so happy serving Krishna that we forget everything. But we sometimes need some of these techniques so we can support our devotional practices and standing on the holy name. So when we're doing this seminar, the entire idea of the seminar is not just like, okay, I can have my emotions in control. Yeah, you want to have your emotions in control, but why? So that you can be a stage of a steady mind and you can serve Krishna properly and you can do your duties that Krishna has given to you, right? Like, we will be mothers or we will be wives or we will be daughters or sisters and all. We have duties in all of those relationships. When our emotions are in control, we can view those duties that Krishna has given to us properly. So thank you very much. Let's review self-observation, self-acceptance, and then a higher reward. If you think all of these things, we don't discuss so much in that. But we are, yes? I finished in time, I'm happy. We are fixing? Okay, thank you for coming, but class just got done.
It's not done? Really?
Yeah, it's 7:30, but we were ending at 7 because somebody else needs to show. We'll go on to someone comes.
Can we
share everything? I'll share everything, yeah. So this is, you know, the higher reward also, that you're changing your emotions or you want to have a more peaceful response because you want to be a more peaceful person. You want to be like how Krishna wants you to be, peaceful, happy, loving, serving. And this is a reward. It's like, you know, usually when we scream, you are, wow, so powerful. Right? Some of that, we don't think in so many ways, but because of all the films we've watched, anger looks really powerful. Right, because I'm somebody of the face and you know, overturn the truck, you know, like it looks like aggression looks very powerful, and that's how media is making it out to be. Or even the politicians, they're just like, oh, that's all taking me, and they do all of those things, and it looks very powerful. Wow, you know, somebody is aggressive, very powerful. But when I came to school, I said, no, that is actually being weak, you know, you're not in control of anything. And you don't know how to have a measured response. You want to be that peaceful person, and that's actually a higher reward. Be in that peaceful state so you can worship Krishna. You can really fulfill the purpose of your life. And then we also pray, we surrender to Krishna, and we, another thing we didn't cover is service to devotees. Service to Krishna and service to devotees. Because when we do that service also, our heart is being cleansed. And patience with yourself. So, thank you very much. Any questions, comments, any sharing that you all want to do?
So I actually really like the connection, the way you progress in life, like how you connect, and it's really helping, and I think that's the best thing you can do, you know, connect to the God and
because He will help us.
Yeah.
We'll share the slides and we'll share the recording, so you can keep sharing. But I think some of these things I want to do like every 6 months, because I find it very helpful for myself.
What are the other classes that you take other than this?
So what we try to do is, a lot of our classes we try to time it along with the school vacation. And the school, like when school is on, we have a lot of women's classes, and school is off, mothers are really busy, so then we don't have a lot of classes. But I wanted to have this one because we wanted to do publicity in Anandmila and get four registrations. And, you know, so because we want to really serve the women as a part of the community. Okay, and family systems, right? So other classes that we have done is we did one course on habits, form good ones and break the bad ones, which kind of similar to this. You know, the same principles, because these emotional responses are a habit. And you can apply this technique in any other habit you want to fix. And what else? We did obstacles in bhakti. Then she and Radhika taught chanting Hare Krishna, techniques of chanting Hare Krishna. Obstacles in chanting Hare Krishna, how to overcome the obstacles and the glories of chanting Hare Krishna, you know, how powerful is Krishna's name and how Krishna's name is non-different from Krishna. Then we also did God is my anchor. We did sessions on that. So the first session was about everyone sharing on how they felt the presence of God in some very difficult times of their life and how, you know, that keeps them going, knowing that God is their anchor. And then we discussed the story of Gajendra, the elephant from Srimad Bhagavatam, and how he had everything going for him. He had five-star education, and the power, influence, fame, prestige, and he had so many women to enjoy with, and wine, and he was like the hero. But then how when he's in the water, and a crocodile catches his leg, and bites him, it's 1,000 years he's fighting, but he's not able to get the thing out, and then he realizes how none of his power, prestige, influence, fame, money, women, nothing can help him. And he finally surrenders after 1,000 years. And 1,000 years are celestial years. Time works a little differently in different planetary systems. So in the heavenly planetary systems, 1 day of the heavenly planetary system equals to 6 months of the human. So imagine 1,000 such years. I don't have a math here, but if I sit down and calculate, we all can do it. So he's fighting for 1,000 years and we finally realize that none of that is of any meaning to surrender to Krishna. So, and then how Krishna reciprocates with him and immediately comes to him. Like, immediately comes to him as soon as he calls out to him. So then we discussed, after that we discussed about how women felt like, you know, there was a time when they were just struggling with their mind and intelligence and trying to fix problems on their own and thinking they're the controller. But then mind when they say, oh, Krishna helped me. And then, you know, immediately they got that help. So, you know, God is your anchor. And then now we're going to do Heart of a Mother. I'm not a mother myself. I don't have children. But I still, I'm very inspired about this whole thing of, on, you know, just being a woman and the contribution of women and the impact and power of women in society and how very important it is for the next generation to, you know. If you think about it, all the brahmacharis and sannyasis, they come from women. They come from really good women, strong women, cultured women, who treat, you know, raise their children very nicely. And then what do the brahmacharis and sannyasis do? They go all around the world, sharing the message of God with everyone, all the gurus. Yeah? So where is it coming from? Of course, it's coming from a good mother. Also, I mean, of course, their own, you know, but also from that good motherhood. So I'm not a feminist. And we don't want to be feminists in Krishna's world. Because actually, one thing I learned when I came to Krishna consciousness, there's only one Purusha, that's Krishna. Everyone else is feminine. So, I'm not a feminist, and neither are any of the teachers. Like, she teaches, Radhika teaches, and there's another teacher, Krishna Mahi, she teaches, Radhika teaches. We all teach different, share, not teach. But the goal is to help women get their self-worth in being women. And just connecting deeply with the value system that they all have. You know, we all have very nice value systems that come from just growing up in India. And it's, you know, because of these like certain influences, we tend to get confused. And we have so many questions. So what I want to do is just glorify womanhood for a woman. Make them feel, oh, this is a wonderful service I have. And not keep them into it, but then the way we do our seminars is also because of scientific basis and psychological on the spiritual basis. So one we're going to have is Heart of a Mother, and for some of us who don't have children, we can still be mothers to the larger society and still be nurturing, loving and caring and develop those qualities. So we're going to, the first session we have is all of us will discuss our different experiences and what is our theme in being that loving, caring and nurturing person. And then the next 3 sessions we will discuss people like Kunti, Draupadi, Niti, Dhruva's mother, I was telling you yesterday. Ashoka Mami, beautiful mother, how she took care of Krishna, how she disciplined him, how she loved him, and how she took care of him. You know, this theme, those, you know, like there are so many lessons on parenting, so many lessons on patience, tolerance, and everything else from that. Then we're going to do how your past influences your own future and your child's future. Mm-hmm. We're going to do that, and then we're going to do, should I work or quit? For those of us who have an option. Others be confused. So we're going to give tips on how to think about it. We're not going to give the decision to anyone because it's, you know, everyone's situation is unique. Then we're going to do how to know my suitable spouse. You know, what are the things to look for. Yes. Actually, I think some of these are those for boys and girls, like men and women. Some of them, like parenting ones, I think are kind of the thing. But also, there's a lot that is there in Srimad Bhagavatam on this, on how Devahuti looked for the right reasons to have a spouse, and then a lot of things. And then also how sometimes we have some unmet needs.
I've been
met you before. Your husband is wonderful.
How do you know?
He is. No, but also, like, I know you love it. Yeah, no, it's, you know, sometimes some people marry for the wrong reasons. Like, there are a lot of unmet needs that we have, and then since someone has grown up feeling inadequate, so then someone makes them feel adequate, and then you get attracted to the person, and then after you felt enoughly adequate, and then you start noticing, man, what a mess in my life. And nothing else makes sense, you know. Also, like, recognizing all of those things, and then knowing the right characteristics. And knowing, if you do this, this is where you end up, and if you do this, this is where you end up, and finally, future. So that, and this is, I think all of these things are very important, because finally, after you hear all this philosophy, you got to live your life. Right? So you want to learn how to apply those things in your life. So, like, there are a group of people who are inspired by this thing. Try to do that, right? Yes.
Who does the mantra
meditation?
Balram
Milan. Yeah, they're trying to. No, he does it along with two more devotees, but they were not able to come. But there is another devotee, Nitya Balram, or Narendra Reddy. He's a volunteer coordinator also. So he teaches yoga also, I think, on Sundays in the morning. We have three yoga classes, Saturday and Sunday. Since you like attending classes, you can come for that. And so he and Balram Lila Prabhu and another devotee was there, Srinivas Gopal Prabhu was also there. So they are going to just help us. Because what we figured is that we are teaching a lot of discover yourself in Bhagavad Gita and all of that. You know, like so many people are coming to the temple and, you know, Hare Krishna chanting. Finally, after all these classes, you know. It is that Hare Krishna chanting will be useful, and then, you know, we're not teaching them how to do that, so that's where. And then Hare Krishna Prabhu has a goal of having people chant 1 billion names of the Lord this year. So he wants us to equip people to do that, whoever is willing, of course. I think they have some chart and
stuff. You have to tell them that,
yeah,
that's what I did. Right? I mean, and then they can.
And Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. That's already 16 names. Yeah. And then so many of us chant 16 rounds every day. So 16 into 108 into 16. That's around 25,000 names a day. So when they know how many people chant 16 rounds every day, because, you know, some people have taken a vow, it's easy to calculate. 1 billion names. We're doing a lot of exciting things, and please join us. And another thing that we want to do in this women's team is, if you have something you want to share, then we can arrange a time for that. Because what we want to do is growth by learning from each other. Because it's not pollination, but the crops are good. So, you know, like, we all have, you know, dealt with something in our life, and, you know, we want to share. And so we want to give that space also. So we learn. So one is we develop the humility to learn from each other. Not that I am the greatest, you know, we can learn from everyone. And then also bhakti is a group process. You can't do it alone. You can do anything alone, actually, but this modern society has this false conception of teaching you to be independent. And you can't.